Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle, and this is my friend and colleague, Alfonso Rachel, and this is The Virtue Signal. Today, we're going to be talking about the worsening race relations in America. And the reason I like doing this so much with Zoe is because I can talk with him about anything, not just race relations. In fact, this is the thing we probably talk least about. And the thing I like most about it is I think it would be refreshing for people to hear a conversation about race from two individual people who have individual opinions. Zoe, you and I have known each other for a while, but the thing that you said that I thought was most moving and certainly affected me the most ever was we were coming out of a meeting of a bunch of conservatives, and people were basically saying, look, a black conservative, your voice is so incredible. And you basically said to me, can I just be a conservative? You know, can I just be a conservative? I heard Lawrence Fishburne say the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. When I was editing a show called Sunday Morning Shootout, he was asked by Peter Guber what he thought about Barack Obama. It's 2007. It's just kind of, you know. Mm-hmm. And he phrased the question this way. He says, you know, as a black man, how do you feel about, as a black American, how do you feel about Barack Obama? And Lawrence Fishburne just turned to him and said, can I just answer as an American? Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, there you go.
Yeah.
Right. That's really what it comes down to, I think, is conservatism is about individuality and the content of your character.
Yes. Yes. And there's such a conflict with that, you know, Bill, because you have a lot of blacks who are in the conservative movement. They don't want to be, whether they're black or Latino or people of color. Right. They'll say, you know, we're not hyphenated Americans. Right. And I agree with that. Yes, we're just Americans, but they want to be hyphenated conservatives and they want to be hyphenated. I see too much of that. Right.
Yeah.
Very few do I see like there's like some big distinction. And I for myself, I'm like, no, man, you got to be consistent. I'm a conservative. I'm Republican. Right. I'm Christian. I'm an American. The only time it's important to bring up my skin color, man, is if I come up missing. We're trying to find. Then that might be important, you know.
Yeah. You know, you measure there's an astronomical term for how reflective an object is, and it's called albedo. Mm. And if both of us disappear and they want to find one or the other, then you might have an albedo a number enter into the equation. But other than that, it's pretty much useless.
Yeah.
Man, that's just a really great point. Mm. It really is. And one of the things I also saw when I was working on that show, which of course was run by gigantic Hollywood liberals, mm. although I admired them both very much, Peter Barton, Peter Guber. I thought I liked them both very much. But nevertheless, one thing I noticed, and I see this all the time, is that when they would have a black guest on the show, you could watch them put on the kid gloves, you know. Mm. You could actually see it. You could see it in their posture. You could see it in their language, this kind of deferential kind of thing, like, we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Mm. And we have to be, you know, and I just watching them protect themselves. And I thought to myself, this is, if not the most common form of racism, it's certainly the most insidious. This idea that put aside all this left-wing nonsense, you know, this idea that you've got to be especially careful mm. with this person because of their skin color mm. is a way of saying mm-hmm. they cannot handle criticism, they cannot handle any kind of real world transactions that occur. And I just did a day or two ago a video about this college professor from Northwestern who had sent his white students home with a kind of a racism detector kit, you know, and it allowed you to rate yourself on a scale of like one, which is, well, down here, I guess, one, which is white supremacist all the way up to white abolitionist. Mm. And I looked at this thing and I thought, this is the most evil, mm. racist garbage I can imagine. Yes. So I decided I'd take the test and guess what? I got it. I got 8 out of 8. I'm the wokest social justice warrior that ever lived.
Yeah. That's awesome. And you know, the thing, and you see, you know, we were talking about this a little earlier, Bill, and the problem is that if we want to deal with this, because it's getting worse, and I think conservatives are led into a model. One, it's bad enough that liberals are led by liberals. Into a model of understanding. And I don't mean to step on toes of conservatives, but I'm sorry. I'm going to have to, like, you know, do a little tough love here. it's understandable liberals will be followed into this, but unfortunately, a lot of conservatives are being led into this too. And I think a lot of times, you know, we hear stuff from liberals and they're generally lying, which that's true. But also know when to detect. Don't be so quick to be reactive or a knee-jerk reactor to what they're saying, because there is a lot of truth to what they're saying. Accept the premise when you understand that what they're saying, they're projecting it onto you. What they're doing is absolutely true. I'll give you an example. When liberals talk about white privilege, conservatives say there's no such thing as white privilege. Yes, there is, right? And if you say that there's no such thing as white privilege, then you've just given the Democrats a pass, right? You've just erased their whole white privilege apartheid history. Now you've got nothing to stand on to throw it back at them and what they've always done. To say that there is no such thing as systematic racism, that's not true. So when liberals say, well, there's systematic racism, you'd be like, darn right there is. Right? And it's exactly where you are. The systematic, when they say that there's no prison industrial complex, are you kidding me? With the legions of liberal lawyers and activist judges who are putting so many black people in jail, you want to tell me there's no such thing as systematic racism? Where a Planned Parenthood is systematically put into areas to carry out the genocidal campaign of Margaret Sanger? You want to tell me there's no system? You know, it's like, take it and put it right back on them. Because if you dismiss it, Bill, if they dismiss it, then you've just erased all the Democrats' history and they're able to take that and put it on you.
When you were talking about this, especially the prison industrial complex, I was reminded of just one of my very favorite moments from The Funniest Man Who Ever Lived, and that's Richard Pryor. And he was saying he was relatively young in his career, and he got booked to go up to this penitentiary. And he said, as I was, you know, getting ready to go there, I was like, down with the whole thing, you know, and we're gonna knock down the system and the walls, and we're gonna free these brothers and all this other stuff. And he said, and then I got there and I got a chance to stand in front of this audience and get to know him a little better. And thank God for penitentiaries, he said. you know, of all the, certainly on this topic, of all the people that we should be teaching and of all the people we should be learning about, is no question in my mind is Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington, there's a thousand stories I could tell about him, but this is the one I like the most. He gets to Tuskegee. He's been given the directorship of this institute that white money and white Southerners are using to build this black college in Alabama. And there are no materials there. There's no ground. They don't have any land. They don't have any wood. They got nothing. So he's going around to former slaveholders. And when I say former slaveholders, I mean like 6-7 years ago kind of thing. And his honesty and his earnestness is getting a bit like, you know, this guy, they put the institute on this former plantation, and the Southern racist slave owner says, yeah, I'll give you 6 months to pay off half of it. But here's my favorite story about them, about what Booker T. Washington said. He said, what we found pretty early was that there weren't any bricks. We wanted to have a nice brick building, and there just weren't any to be had in Alabama. So we decided to make our own, and it's like the Monty Python sketch about the castle. We tried the first brick and it fell apart. So we went to the second brick, fell apart. We couldn't get the baking of the brick right. We got a third kiln and that failed. And then finally, we realized that we didn't have enough money for a fourth kiln. So I took my watch and I drove, you know, a road 20 miles, pawned it, got the money for that, got a fourth kiln, and then we got the thing working. Now we get to the point. He says, now, he's writing several years after the fact, Tuskegee manufactures hundreds of thousands of the finest bricks in the country. And he said, and what we find is that white racists are coming to us for our bricks, and they're using our bricks to build their houses with. And he said, this thing that I'm holding in my hand here, this is the antidote to prejudice. This is the best brick available at any price. And it's made by these black students right here. And when white people have to come and buy bricks from this guy, it is an admission and a revelation to them as well that everything they thought about this is just wrong. Mm-hmm. And the thing that struck me the most about it was the tangibility of it. He said the example of a black person building a brick house was so much more powerful than the thought of somebody, of a black person building a brick house, that the idea that it could happen. No, just go out and do it. And him holding that brick to me is just, it's the defining moment of what this country could have done and for a large time did do to get out of this this horrible, horrible scar on the American psyche that the left seems to be just determined to open as wide as possible and pour as much salt in as they possibly can.
Indeed, and I hope folks will understand that the Democrat Party, whatever they're doing, there's nothing new about it. And I hope conservatives will stop, you know, giving this idea, because these things are getting worse. And if we're talking about why these things are getting worse, you know, I'm not trying to step on any toes here, but if we want to get down to why this is getting worse and if we can reverse it, there's some things that, you know, that would be helpful to do. And let's realize that this is not a new Democrat Party. It's not a new socialist Democrat Party. The idea of forcing your dependency on somebody else is not a new thing, whether it be by socialism, communism, or slavery. It's not a new thing with Democrats. So, you know, this thing of wanting the black community, because now the black community is not used to pick cotton. You know, the black community is now used to farm votes, to influence.
Their vote plantation.
Exactly. And everything that the Democrats are trying to push through, Bill, they depend on us to do it. It doesn't matter what it is. Immigration, tax policy, orientation, and whatever domestic policies or even global policies that they have, they lean on us for that. Right? They've instituted our plight. They're the ones who forced their plight on us, and now they're using the very plight that they created in us to get sympathy votes for whatever it is that they want. So, you know, in that, it's a sad thing that too much of the black community trust their oppressors. And this lesson has been taught, you know, biblically. It's been taught. But, you know, it's just like you said, this condescension and playing and pandering to people's pride. They're already right there. And I want to say this really quick, Bill, to conservatives. I don't think you're going to hear black conservatives, or I don't think you're not going to hear conservatives say that black people need special treatment. We don't need special treatment. We don't need special attention. But this is something that conservatives need to understand. The Democrats have a very special freakish fetish for us, right? And they have to keep a hold of us. It's not about conservatives paying special attention to us. You need to pay special attention to what Democrats are doing. You have to get in the way of what they're doing to try to keep a hold of us. If you're dismissive of that, they will continue to use us to wreck this country. Conservatives, you have to get in the way of that. Not for special attention for us, not for any sort of holding us by the hand to do anything. It's not about that. You just have to get in the Democrats' way of it.
Wow, man. That's just perfectly said. This is Booker T. Washington's argument about dealing with racism in the South. Is he basically said, what we're going to do here at Tuskegee is we're going to convince everybody within the range of my voice, metaphorical voice, that the 3 million blacks who were formerly slaves are an asset, not a liability. Mm-hmm. To the community, that they are an asset, they're a financial asset, they're a spiritual asset, they're an asset in every way, and he so understood it. And of all the things that strike me, I think about modern race relations, the thing that just I will never genuinely understand the emotional driver behind it. But when you talk to Booker T. Washington, was born a slave in a hut with a dirt floor. Mm. And he was a slave until he was 5 or 6 years old. Doesn't really know how long because nobody knows when he was born. Mm. Nobody wrote it down. But when he talks about the years immediately after the Civil War, the thing that just blew the top of my skull off reading Up From Slavery, which I cannot recommend highly enough to anybody, what blew my mind was a guy who was writing at the time, right? He's not looking back 150 years. He's looking back 5, 6, 7 years, something like that. And he was talking about how when the Civil War was over and the South had been defeated, he said the most useless people anywhere were the sons and daughters of the plantation owners because they'd never learned how to do anything.
Right.
And he talked about how black slaves would take a collection. These people have nothing, nothing. And nevertheless, they would donate money or food or whatever to the people that had held them in bondage just years before. And to me, the thing that's so striking is that shows just the fundamental humanity of people, right? Yes, this person did me an enormous harm. Perhaps the greatest harm you can do to somebody. And at the same time, I see that this person is suffering, so I'm going to help them. This is the attitude that a lot of, probably most, if not all, of the slaves took. And that generosity of spirit was from the people who were actually held in slavery. And the thing that blows my mind is that the further we get away from the actual transgression, from the actual offense, the further we get away in time, the more resentful people come. I can't get it, man.
Indeed, man. And the Lord says, you know, to your enemies and those who hate you, you basically show them kindness, pray for them, bless them, show them kindness. You will heap hot coals on their head by doing so. It's amazing that the kind of strength that Booker T. Washington would have, you know, to be able to have that kind of grace and forgiveness for people who are still alive, you know, his contemporaries. Meanwhile, we have a culture that's taught to hate people and not forgive people who have been dead for generations, you know, and hate of the people, their so-called legacy. Right? We hate the legacy of it. They won't let these people die. And strangely enough, these are the same people who tell you that you can't judge somebody for their past. You know? But they're judging America all the time for people who have been long dead. And what is that, Bill? What is it? It's pride, man. Because the pride won't let you forgive. The pride, it's you think that if you forgive these people, it's a show of weakness and you've forgotten about your struggle. Well, you don't get to forget about the struggle because you got to struggle with your pride anyway. Forgiveness itself is a pride, is a struggle to even forgive, but it takes strength. So when people feel like they get to validate, I got to be down for the struggle. Well, struggle with forgiveness. Don't sit there and struggle with people who have been long dead.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything to add to that other than a specific example, which I think is probably the most egregious and dramatic one I've ever seen. It happened, I want to say, maybe less than a year ago, something like that. There's a statue of Abraham Lincoln, and there is he's standing there with his hand out, and a black man is on the ground kneeling, and he's got his chains broken. And Lincoln is basically giving something like a benediction or something like this. And a young black student, within the last year or so, walked past a statue that's been there for 150 years or whatever and decided that it offended him. And he decided it offended him because he was on his knees. Now, what he didn't realize was that Lincoln didn't have his hand on this guy's head. And furthermore, the statue showed that the slave's eyes were not on Lincoln. The slave's eyes were up and out. But this is the part about this that makes me kind of nutty. This person started a movement to have that statue removed as an outrage to the entire idea of slavery. But that statue was paid for by slaves, by people who had absolutely nothing. They're the ones that paid for it. Now, whatever you want to make about the dynamics of it, for people to say that I'm going to pull this statue down because of my great respect for slaves and the horrible injustice that was done to them. In this one particular case, at least, you're spitting on people who were freed. You're spitting on former slaves. Yep. You talk about how much you're outraged about this, but you're trying to pull down something that the poorest people in America scraped together out of a feeling that was so strong that they felt like they had to do it. And you want to talk about privilege. This is not even a racial privilege. This is like a modern privilege. Here's this guy who's going to some top school and he's got 24-hour entertainment, internet and cell phones and $200 sneakers and all of it. And he's being the victim from people who were dressed in rags and handed some of those rags over to people who were collecting rags so that they could make the statue of Abraham Lincoln. The arrogance of that.
Yes.
You know,
Yes, man. And you know, the whole point of a struggle, Bill, and as we struggle with these things, with these statues and stuff like that, but the whole point of a struggle is to get free. That's why people, yeah. to get through whatever challenge and to be free from this challenge. And, you know, and you can't be angry and be free at the same time. You can't just stay with these struggles and assume that it's somehow redeeming and that you're honoring somebody. We're not honoring any slaves by fabricating these struggles for ourselves. That's where we are nowadays. And people, once again, they seek pride in that. Look at me struggle. Look at me struggle. Aren't I such a good person and being conscious and woke and aware of these struggles that I'm in? It's like, hey, you don't know nothing about no struggle. It's an insult to slaves who were there with Lincoln, people who endured all this stuff going all the way, these apartheid policies that came all the way up through the 60s, that people are still grumbling about today. We're not honoring them. Only the very ignorant. We would have to assume that these people were painfully ignorant if they're looking at us and saying, excellent job. That's right. You stay angry. You stay brain chained and stay with us out in the fields. You stay with us. We would have to think that they're so stupid and petty to assume that that's what they want. And sadly, maybe some of them were. You know, we know how some of the field Negroes felt about the house Negroes. That dynamic's gone back a long, even before American slavery. That's been a long thing. And slavery has touched everybody. You know, but to be in today, in this prideful assumption that we're struggling as bad as our ancestors did, man, it's a joke, man. And it's an insult to them. It's an insult to ourselves.
Just as a closing thought here, once again, something I'd never considered. One of the things that is really repugnant to me and to most people, certainly to people who have relatives in the military or who've served in the military, is are these cases of stolen valor. Mm. And that's the term that's given to people that dress up like Marines, mm-hmm. for example, and go into stores or shopping malls and have people come up to them and say, just want to thank you for your service. And then universally, an actual serviceman will encounter somebody like this, instantly tell that this person is faking and confront them about it. And that's a perfect term for this, stolen valor. It's a guy who didn't go through this living hell that earned the respect and the admiration from people that had never met you before. Mm. But he is stealing that other person's heroism and coating himself in the clothes of a hero when he didn't do anything heroic. Mm. And I consider, by the way, just for the record, I'm not talking about combat heroism here. The thing about the military is once you sign on that dotted line, you are put in harm's way whether you like it or not. Mm-hmm. So they're all equal in that regard. But this seems to me exactly what this modern social justice movement is doing, is they are trying to clothe themselves in the rags of slaves so that they can steal their victimhood and steal their pain and wear it like it's their own as a lever to achieve not only political ends, but as a lever to elevate themselves into genuine victims when the fact of the matter is, they're not. They're simply not. They haven't got anything remotely like the life that they're trying to clothe themselves in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and sadly, that's what's seen as woke, enlightened, you know, and it's so in vogue nowadays.
Well, we could talk about this a lot more, and we will. But time is pressing. Zoe's got a KKK meeting to go to, and I've got a BLM riot I have to be a part of in just a few minutes. So nevertheless, these kind of conversations are extremely rare, and they're rare because everybody is overly sensitive about everything. Mm-hmm. We have a number of people here who pay for these programs to keep them coming, and we just work for individuals. Neither one of us are in any fear of getting fired or losing our jobs or our livelihoods because of what we say on this show. And that's why I enjoy it so much. And that's why I'm so grateful, especially to the new members who joined us so that we could bring Alfonso Rachel back, because he's just an amazing man. He's an amazing fellow, and he's one of my real friends. And it's just a real honor and pleasure to know you, man.
Hey, the lucky one's me, man.
It's not good.
Get too mushy here.
Let's not get carried away here, man. thank you very much for joining us today. And we'll have two more of these shows called The Virtue Signal next week. For Alfonso Rachel, I'm Bill Whittle. Thanks again for your membership. We'll see you next time.